Okay guys, this episode is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is such an easy way to monetize your podcast, no matter whether you're big or only just starting out, and it's super easy to use. I signed up a few months ago and I've already had several sponsors. Once you sign up, you have a dashboard with a really easy to use interface and a list of sponsors. Once you've picked a company that you'd like to promote, you send them a proposal and wait to hear back. You are in complete control of who you advertise, when you advertise, and even how much you charge. You also have complete creative freedom, and you get the same security if you are a brand too. There's no cost to signing up, and you don't pay a penny until you find the right podcaster for you. You also have some control over what the advert says, and no advert will be released until you deem it to be perfect. With payments typically received within 24 hours of distribution, Podcorn was an absolute no-brainer for me, and I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to sign up too. Head over to podcorn.com, that's podcorn.com, to find out more.
She was found partially clothed.
She had been sexually assaulted and strangled.
Manually strangled from the front, meaning with the hands.
The body of young Wanda Walkowitz was discovered shortly after 10 o'clock this morning.
The autopsy revealed that the girl was strangled and death was caused by asphyxiation.
I feel that there's no question that somebody knows this man. He was seen on two different occasions in the area where we're looking.
Are you convinced that it was the same man who killed Carmen Colon and Wanda Walkowitz?
I'm not convinced, but I strongly suspect that we're looking for the same person.
Hi M&Ms, welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. The 1970s were a time where people felt safe. They allowed their children to walk to the shops unattended. They allowed them to play outside without worrying about what would happen to them. No one feared the people that walked toward them on the street. No one felt that pang of anxiety when walking in the dark. People felt safe, especially the people of Rochester, New York. I'm sure they felt safe leaving their doors unlocked, putting the bins out late at night. I'm sure the 1970s were a much more carefree time, no one looking over their shoulder to make sure they weren't being followed or holding a key in between fingers just in case they got attacked. However, three murders that took place in Rochester in the early 70s would be sure to inflict the utmost fear into everyone, especially parents of young children at the time. Children who could once walk to the shops without a care in the world, who could play out until dark, were now being kept inside and watched more closely by their anxious, concerned, terrified parents. Carmen Colon was 10 years old. She had a big personality, a large, beautiful smile, and was well known around her Bull's Head neighbourhood in Rochester, New York. On the afternoon of the 16th of November 1971, Carmen's grandmother asked her to go and collect a prescription from the pharmacy for her grandfather. When Carmen entered the pharmacy on West Main Street, she was informed that the prescription she was trying to collect hadn't yet been processed. So instead of hanging around and waiting, Carmen told the store owner that she had to go. Eyewitnesses then placed Carmen getting into a car that was parked near the pharmacy at 10 past 4, and it seemed like that car had been waiting for her. But this wouldn't be the last time Carmen was seen alive. And when the public found out what had occurred during the last known sighting of Carmen Colon, they were enraged. The last known sighting of Carmen alive took place about 50 minutes after she was last seen getting into the unknown car near the pharmacy. At about 5 p.m. that day, drivers on the I-190 witnessed what we now know to be Carmen running from a car that witnesses described as potentially being a dark-coloured Ford Pinto hatchback. Not only was the girl running, but she was naked from the waist down and was waving her arms frantically, desperately trying to get someone to stop and save her. But whether it was the bystander effect or whether there was another reason no one stopped to help the 10-year-old girl, for the rest of their lives these witnesses had to live with knowing that they could have possibly prevented a murder. At least one of these witnesses then observed as Carmen was submissively taken back to the car by her abductor. Maybe, if even one of these cars had stopped and hadn't just carried on driving, Carmen may have avoided a brutal death. Although I have to put myself in that position, I am very untrusting, very sceptical. I have to wonder if I was in that position, I saw a girl running down the motorway or down a road, would I stop? In this day and age, I think a huge part of me would be concerned it was a ruse and that by stopping, I'd be leading myself into my own capture and murder. I'm sure we've all heard of stories of people pretending to be police officers and pulling you over late at night, or someone leaving a recording of a crying baby on a doorstep to get them to open their front door and make themselves vulnerable. I know this was the 70s, but I wonder if this was the reason people didn't want to stop. They didn't want to put their own lives in danger. Maybe they didn't think the girl had been abducted. Maybe they thought it was a girl throwing a tantrum and she was being led back to the car by her father. Who knows what went through those witnesses' minds that fateful day? All we can know is that all of this speculation won't reverse what happened to Carmen. When Carmen failed to return home, she was reported missing to the Rochester Police Department at 7:50 that evening. 2 days after Carmen was witnessed desperately trying to flag someone, anyone down to help save her from the man who had taken her off a busy street in broad daylight in the middle of New York, two teenage boys were riding their bikes when they came across Carmen's partially nude body in a ditch, about 12 miles from where she had been seen just 48 hours earlier, desperately trying to escape the clutches of her killer. Initially, the boys thought the body was a mannequin, but real true crime fans will know, it's never a mannequin. The girl was wearing a top, shirt, socks and trainers, which suggests to me that she'd been redressed. Carmen's coat was found in a culvert about 300 yards from her body, and her trousers weren't found until the 30th of November, 2 weeks after she was abducted. Her trousers were found near the service road of the I-190, where the witnesses had observed the girl trying to escape her abductor and murderer. An autopsy performed on Carmen confirmed everyone's worst fears. She had been raped, had suffered a fractured skull and vertebrae before being strangled to death. Police were able to collect evidence from the location her body was found, but unfortunately they've never been able to come up with a DNA profile of their suspect. A huge manhunt ensued in an attempt to identify the person who had so brutally taken this young girl's life. The Times Union and the Democrat and Chronicle newspapers initially put up a reward that totaled $2,500 for information that would lead police to Carmen's killer. All information the two newspapers received was sent forward to police, and over time, the reward grew to $6,000 after several businesses and residents added their own private donations. In the months following Carmen's murder, the police interviewed several people, but they were all released with no charge. It was starting to look like Carmen's killer may not be caught, and by the 21st of December, just over a month since Carmen was taken off the streets of New York, there were only three detectives working on her murder full-time. In a further attempt to try and catch Carmen's killer before he struck again, five large billboards were placed along major highways in Rochester in early 1972. They all featured a picture of Carmen with the title, "Do You Know Who Killed Carmen Colon?" While this brought in several new leads, it still didn't lead to the capture of Carmen's killer. 17 months after Carmen's tragic death, 11-year-old Wanda Walkerich disappeared under very similar circumstances. Wanda was a redhead ball of energy, who her sister Rita later described as a bit of a tomboy. Wanda was a year older than Rita, and they also had a younger sister, Michelle. The girls lived with their mother Joyce after losing their father to a heart attack a few months earlier. Rita recalls the 2nd of April 1973 as being a dark, grisly, rainy day, but an ordinary one nonetheless. The girls would often buy groceries for dinner, so when Joyce sent Wanda to the shop, no one had any idea that running a simple errand would cause a 40-year nightmare to ensue. Wanda had bought the groceries she had been instructed to get by Joyce at the delicatessen: tuna fish, milk, cupcakes and cat food. She left the store and began the walk home down Conkney Avenue. But as the hours went by and Wanda didn't return from the store, Wanda's mum became more concerned and eventually reported her daughter missing at 8 p.m. that evening, 3 hours after she'd sent her out. Police wasted no time starting a search for the 11-year-old, with about 50 detectives searching wherever they thought Wanda may have ended up. They searched several square miles around her home, the delicatessen, and they also searched in the areas around the Genesee River where Wanda liked to play. Unfortunately, these searches didn't lead police to locating Wanda. Although police were able to identify a witness who saw Wanda struggling with a bag of shopping, with the last known sighting of her being on Conkey Avenue when a brown car was driving towards her. When the witness turned back, both Wanda and the brown car were gone. The following day, at 10:15 a.m, Wanda's body was found, fully clothed, in a ditch by an officer. The ditch where Wanda's body was found was at the bottom of a hill that ran alongside the State Route 104. It appeared as if her body had been thrown from a moving vehicle and she had tumbled down the embankment, landing in her temporary final resting place before she was located. An autopsy revealed that, like Carmen, despite being fully dressed, Wanda had been raped and had also been strangled. Although whilst it appeared Carmen had been strangled from the front, likely at the hands of the killer, it appeared that Wanda had been strangled from behind, likely with a belt. The autopsy also revealed defensive wounds that indicated Wanda had fought for her life, but the 11-year-old, 4-foot-tall, 65-pound girl just wasn't a match for her attacker. Whilst she had been redressed, police were able to identify traces of semen and pubic hair on the child's body, and with this evidence they were able to create a DNA profile. They also identified a strand of fur that belonged to a white cat, a pet that Wanda definitely didn't own. As with Carmen's murder, the police set up an anonymous hotline and distributed flyers in an attempt to catch the girl's killer. A $10,000 reward was put up for any information that would lead to the arrest and conviction of Wanda's abductor and murderer. Whilst these efforts didn't lead to the location of Wanda's killer, they did find a man who witnessed Wanda standing next to the passenger side door of a brown vehicle, and it looked like the girl was in conversation with the driver, although unfortunately the witness was unable to provide any description of the driver. What they were able to tell police, though, is that they witnessed this take place just 0.2 miles from Wanda's home. The tip line also produced another witness. This time they witnessed a man forcing a redhead girl into a light-coloured Dodge Dart between 5:30 and 6 p.m. the evening Wanda disappeared. Whilst the two girls disappeared under very similar circumstances, Rochester police refused to link Carmen and Wanda's murders. In September 1973, WOKR, a local television network, broadcast a 30-minute episode that featured a reconstruction of Wanda's disappearance and the finding of her body. And whilst this reconstruction led to police receiving over 200 calls from the public, they were still no closer to finding Wanda's killer. On the evening of the 26th of November 1973, 7 months after Wanda was brutally murdered, Carolyn Maenza reported her daughter Michelle missing. Michelle, a shy 11-year-old girl, had last been seen by her school friends at about 20 past three, where she was seen walking to a local shopping centre to pick up her purse, which her mother had left for her in one of the shops. About 10 minutes later, at 3:30, a witness placed Michelle crying in the passenger seat of a vehicle that was described as being either beige or tan in colour and was travelling at a high speed. 2 hours later, a man was driving along Route 350 when he saw a large vehicle, again that was described as being either beige or tan coloured, parked on the side of the road. It appeared that the vehicle had a flat tyre, and stood next to the car was a man with a girl that the witness strongly believed to have been Michelle. Obviously, at the time, Michelle hadn't been reported missing, so I don't know if the witnesses knew Michelle or her family, or later recounted this event to police when Michelle was reported missing. When he saw the vehicle on the side of the road, the man pulled over to offer the driver assistance. But as soon as he approached the man, he pulled the girl behind him and made an effort to obscure his license plates. The witness was so disturbed by the menacing look on the man's face that he drove off. Again, little did he know, he was most probably leaving the girl, if it definitely was Michelle, to face a brutal death. As with Carmen and Wanda, Michelle's fully clothed body was found 2 days after she disappeared, on the 28th of November 1973. She was found in a ditch alongside a rural road in a town in Wayne County, about 15 miles from Rochester. An autopsy was performed, and again, as with the other girls, Michelle had suffered blunt force trauma. She had been raped and then strangled, again from behind with a ligature, possibly a rope. Now, you may remember in Wanda's autopsy, they found white cat hairs, and they knew Wanda didn't own a cat. Police also refused to link the cases together. But when Michelle's autopsy was performed and they too found white cat hair on Michelle's body, I'm sure it forced police to start wondering if they had a serial killer in their midst. A leaf was also found clenched in Michelle's hand, and an analysis of this confirmed that Michelle had more than likely been strangled at or very near to the site where her body was found. A partial palm print was recovered from her neck, as well as traces of semen on her body and underwear, which confirmed that Michelle had been raped by only one individual. Whilst these traces were recovered, as with Carmen's case, they weren't able to create a DNA profile from it. Investigators analysed Michelle's stomach content, which revealed she'd eaten a hamburger and onions about an hour before she was murdered. This seemed to corroborate another witness sighting, placing Michelle at a fast food restaurant in Monroe County with a man who was described as being Caucasian, with dark hair, between the ages of 25 and 35, 6 feet tall, and about 75 kilograms or 165 pounds. Michelle was seen in the car by the witness, and the man was seen walking toward the car with a bag of food in his hands. For whatever reason, Michelle had either felt comfortable enough or scared enough to remain in the car whilst her abductor got the food. This also seemed to corroborate that the witness who saw a man and a girl on the side of Route 350 that afternoon most probably saw Michelle and her abductor probably just minutes before her murder. All three girls, Carmen Colon, Wanda Walkowicz, and Michelle Maenza, were laid to rest at a Catholic cemetery in Rochester. Carmen's funeral was held on the 22nd of November 1971, with over 200 mourners attending. Wanda was laid to rest in a small white and gold casket on the 6th of April 1973. Michelle's open casket funeral took place at the Corpus Christi Church, where hundreds of mourners attended, and her father Christopher concluded the service by describing Michelle as a sweet little girl. As I mentioned earlier, in the beginning of the investigation, police were really reluctant to suggest that these murders were linked. But after Michelle's murder, they just couldn't ignore the similarities between the cases, especially Wanda and Michelle's. All three girls were short, pre-adolescent females who disappeared from the streets of Rochester in the early afternoon. They all came from low-income families. All were Catholic, and none of them lived in a home with both their mum and dad. All three girls' bodies had been found either fully or partially clothed in surrounding counties, and each girl was found near an expressway that would have been easy to access with a vehicle. A detail that I hadn't noticed, all girls were also found in cities that bore the same first letter as their names. Carmen was dumped near Churchville, Wanda in Webster, and Michelle was found in Macedon. It also appeared that Carmen, Wanda, and Michelle had all been thrown out of the car or carried from the car to their temporary final resting place. It wasn't just the girls and their disappearances that were similar in nature, though. Their murders also bared several resemblances to each other. All three girls had been raped before being strangled to death. The only slight difference was that Carmen had been manually strangled from the front, and Wanda and Michelle were strangled with some sort of ligature from behind. Whilst these are slightly different, it's still the same MO, and I have to wonder if Carmen's murder was his first and he was still perfecting his technique. If this was the case, maybe he didn't really know what he was doing with Carmen's murder, but as soon as he strangled her manually, he realised that for whatever reason he wasn't going to do it again, and chose to use ligatures for Wanda and Michelle's murders. These aren't the only links between Wanda and Michelle. Both girls were found with food in their stomachs that had been consumed about an hour before their deaths, and both had been redressed. This detail is different to Carmen's murder, as she had no obvious signs of food in her stomach and was found partially nude. But again, for me at least, the similarities outweigh the differences, and it's entirely possible that Carmen's murder was very slightly different simply because it was their first kill and they were still developing their MO. Now, I'm sure you're wondering why this killer is called the Alphabet Killer or the Double Initial Killer. Well, if you hadn't realised, and honestly I'm not 100% sure I would have if it hadn't have been pointed out, all three girls' first and surname started with the same letter. But whilst this is certainly an interesting detail, police don't put much stock into the theory and say it's probably more of a coincidence, as this would mean that the perpetrator would have had to have stalked his victims for a period of time, which would have increased the likelihood of him getting caught. Although I don't see this as being a completely impossible theory, I certainly wondered what caused Carmen to get into the car willingly. Would a teenage girl just get into a stranger's car? I don't think so. I think it's at least plausible that he stalked the girls beforehand. However, police suggest that Carmen got into the car willingly because she knew her killer, and that her case isn't linked to Wanda and Michelle's at all. Police believe that because there's slight differences in the MOs, Carmen wasn't lured and abducted by a stranger, like they believe Wanda and Michelle to have been, but that her killer was already known to her, maybe a family friend or family member, and that's why she got into the car so easily, and that's why she was killed differently to Wanda and Michelle. I then have to wonder, with the similarities between the cases, whether Wanda and Michelle's killer picked out the details of Carmen's murder and chose to kill them in a similar way so that the police would link them together and believe there's only one killer. Although, if for whatever reason the police linked him to the murders, if this theory is true, they'd have most likely linked him to Carmen's murder too, especially as they have no physical evidence. The murders of all three girls gained a lot of public interest and produced a ton of public outrage. The police put in a lot of effort to catch the killer or killers responsible for the girls' deaths. They released a composite sketch of the man Michelle was seen with hours before she died, and a hotline was put in place to find the girls' killer. They reassured the public that calls to the hotline would remain anonymous and again offered a reward for any information that would lead to a conviction. And while police received several tips from the public, they led nowhere and produced no credible suspects. Whilst the hotline didn't lead police anywhere, that doesn't mean to say that they didn't have any suspects. In fact, they had several. One of those suspects is Carmen's paternal uncle, Miguel Colon. If you remember, Carmen was walking to the pharmacy to collect her grandfather's prescription on the day she disappeared. Carmen made this walk often, but was usually accompanied by her grandfather Felix. However, this time she begged her grandparents to let her make the journey alone. This may not seem like strange behaviour, but when police looked into Miguel further, they found out that he'd bought a car very similar in description to the car witnesses described seeing on the I-490 just weeks before she disappeared. When investigators searched the car, they found that it had been extensively cleaned inside and out. They also found that the trunk of the car had been washed with a strong cleaning solution. And when they approached the dealership the car was bought from, they confirmed the trunk hadn't been washed with any kind of solution prior to sale. Whilst this proves that Miguel cleaned the trunk, it doesn't prove when he did and why. And whilst it's certainly suspicious, it doesn't make him guilty of murder. Police also found a doll that belonged to Carmen in Miguel's car. Although family members said that Carmen was frequently in Miguel's car willingly, and it's possible that she just left the doll in there accidentally. Friends of Miguel's did tell the police something interesting and possibly incriminating, however. About 2 days after Carmen's murder, Miguel told his friends that he was leaving the country because he'd, quote, done something wrong in Rochester, end quote, and did end up leaving the country just 2 days later and relocating to Puerto Rico. Police travelled to San Juan in 1972 in an effort to question Miguel in relation to Carmen's murder. Initially, Miguel fled from authorities, but eventually ended up surrendering and agreeing to being extradited back to Rochester for official questioning. Miguel was unable to give police an alibi for the day Carmen was murdered, and police were unable to find anyone who could corroborate Miguel's whereabouts that day. Whilst there was circumstantial evidence to link Miguel to Carmen's murder, there was no physical evidence to tie him to it. Miguel committed suicide in 1994 at the age of 44 after a domestic violence incident which saw him shooting and wounding his wife and brother. And if Miguel is guilty of Carmen's murder, he took this secret to his grave. Police's second suspect was Dennis Termini, a 25-year-old firefighter who was a prolific offender in Rochester, known as the Garage Rapist. Dennis is known to have committed a minimum of 14 rapes on teenage girls between 1971 and 1973. It's also believed that Dennis owned a vehicle that was very similar in description to the car the witnesses had described. It's also known that Dennis lived extremely close to where Michelle was last seen alive. Weeks after Michelle's death, on the 1st of January 1974, Dennis abducted a teenage girl at gunpoint but fled the scene when the girl refused to stop screaming. He then went on to abduct another girl hours later. However, he was pursued by police and he also ended up committing suicide by shooting himself in the head. A forensic examination of Dennis's car revealed white cat hairs, which had also been found on Wanda and Michelle's body. Although, again, this doesn't prove anything, as I'm sure there are thousands of white cats in the world. Whilst Dennis seemed like a credible suspect, and the murders seemed to have stopped after he died, police exhumed Dennis's body in 2007, and it was confirmed once and for all that Dennis was not the man who had raped and murdered Wanda Wolkowicz. As for Carmen and Michelle, it's impossible to know if Dennis murdered those two, as there was no physical evidence to connect him to the scene, such as DNA. Although I believe the cases are linked, and if he didn't murder Wanda, I find it highly unlikely that he was involved in Carmen or Michelle's murders. Kenneth Bianchi, one half of the Hillside Stranglers, became police's third suspect. He lived in Rochester at the time the girls disappeared and is known to have worked as an ice cream vendor near to where Carmen and Wanda's bodies were found. Kenneth moved from Rochester to Los Angeles in 1976, which is where he and his cousin committed the Hillside Strangler murders. Whilst Kenneth committed the Hillside Strangler murders, he vehemently denies any involvement in the Double Initial murders and has insisted several times that police clear him as a suspect. Joseph Nazzo was arrested in Nevada at the age of 77 in April 2011 for murders that were committed in California between 1977 and 1994. All the victims were believed to have been prostitutes, which is a completely different victimology to this case, except for the fact that his victim's first and last name both started with the same letter. Whilst this is an extremely interesting detail, Joseph Nazzo has also been ruled out as a suspect when his DNA didn't match the semen found on Wanda's body. Although he didn't commit these alphabet murders, he was charged and convicted with the California alphabet murders and was sentenced to death in November 2013. Whilst police have interrogated more than 800 people in relation to the girls' murders, they have never been able to identify their killer or killers. A spokesman for the police said that they remain confident in solving the girls' murders, but a part of me remains apprehensive that this perpetrator will ever be caught. The longer time goes on, the more likely it is that the suspect has passed away. I also have to wonder why the murders just stopped all of a sudden. They got so much publicity that if the killer moved to a different state, I think the cases would have been linked fairly quickly by the press. So why stop with Michelle? Had he stalked all three girls and chosen to murder just them? Or did he start his spree and then fall ill or pass away, stopping him in his tracks? I believe that once a serial killer gets started, they're not just going to randomly stop killing until they're caught. And if the Double Initial killer was in prison for something else, surely they'd have his DNA on file and would be able to identify him that way. I don't know how it works in the US, so that's just me making assumptions, but I'm very sceptical as to whether the killer of these three young girls will ever be caught and brought to justice. But I hold on to hope that one day, the families of the girls will finally get the justice that they've been waiting so long to receive, and they can finally put this nightmare to bed. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.